Back Talk is an extension of the award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time, which airs Thursdays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCVE 90.5 FM. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, this podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Back Talk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie review podcasts on NPR.
I like hearing that. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm the guest, Mary Urena.
And this is Back Talk. Well, Mary, I watched Anna Kendrick for a while and am so pleased with what she has done. She's got so much going for her.
Well, she's supremely talented.
Yeah.
She got her start on Broadway at the age of 12.
Yeah.
One of her first major movie roles was Up in the Air with George Clooney.
Yes.
Which she was
good
nominated
start.
For an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress. So she's got some chops.
Oh, now she's turned to director. She has a film out that's on Netflix, I believe.
Yes, it
right?
is.
And it's called Woman of the Hour.
Well, this is based on the true story of the serial killer Rodney Alcara, who through circumstances ended up on The Dating Game. It's a little before my time.
Mid-70s, I remember it well. Cheese.
Yes. But he ended up as one of the bachelors that a bachelorette questioned and would then pick which one she thought of the three she would want to go on
Mary,
a date on.
Did you find out how this guy ever got on the show? He was already doing his bad stuff.
He was. And he had actually, it's not revealed in the film, but he actually had already served time twice.
Yeah. So how does he get on the show?
So the reason he got on the show was back during that time. They didn't really do any background checks or vet any of the applicants to be on the show. They suspect, was looking for his next victim. Cheryl Bradshaw, who's played by Anna Kendrick, in addition to her directing, she stars as one of the main characters and potential victims. It follows her journey more linearly, I would say, than it follows his journey, because we meet her at the beginning of the film where she's auditioning for a role and dealing with the misogyny of the Hollywood industry through her audition process as an aspiring actress. And then we also follow Rodney, not in his linear form, but kind of back and forth at different times where he's picked his victims and is attacking his victims. There's a confluence between her character and his character of The Dating Game. And in real life, she did pick him. But she got some weird signals from him after the show.
Yes, right.
And refused to go on a date
good
with him.
For her.
And she probably saved her life.
Oh, she probably did. I thought that the auditions were true to form from everything I've ever heard.
Yeah. And I would say true to form then, but unfortunately,
probably.
There's an element of truth in those even now after the Me Too movement.
Sexism is rampant in the entertainment business. It's gotten better. Well, the proof is Anna Kendrick is directing a film and starring in it. There's our proof that things have advanced just to see how they're treated as objects. At the moment, they ask her whether she did nudity or not. And
made really tasteless comments about her breasts.
Yeah, right.
Well, very depressing. And this is 1978, 79. That was probably more accepted behavior.
Sure.
Openly accepted. Yeah. I would say it's probably more closeted today, but still occurs. And the thing that I thought was interesting was when I thought about the film overall, even though we have the confluence of these stories coming together and whether or not she will be one of his victims, he became known as the Dating Game killer. She took the perspective as a female director, I think, to show the issue of objectification of women, not only in her professional life, but then that objectification twisted becomes a serial rapist or a serial killer like Rodney Alcara was.
Yeah.
I really appreciated that this type of script and this type of film was presented through a woman's director's lens.
There you go. And the other point that I thought was so interesting, The Dating Game itself, is that she turns the tables by writing her own questions, because the questions she's given are positively inane.
And they're inane, but they're intended to be kind of cornballish and alluding to sexuality.
Yes, right.
We learned that Cheryl is a graduate of Columbia acting, her degree in acting.
Right.
And her agent books her on this and convinces her to do it to give her exposure because she's not having much success trying to audition for parts. And so she plays along up to a point.
Yeah, she does up to a point.
And then shows her intelligence and her wit and her no holds bar. I'm not going to take any guff from these men. I'm going to try and pick one of them to go on a date. So,
well, after she asks her questions, the moderator there, Ed, Tony Hale, dispatches her immediately.
Oh, yes.
They didn't want any more.
Well, and he's part of the objectification of women. He walks in, the host of the dating game walks into her hair and makeup room while she's getting all of that done, immediately starts passing judgment on her appearance and says, is that the dress you're wearing? No, you're not going to wear that. You're going to wear something else. And really tries to keep her in her place and put her in her place, and is very offended when she does start asking the intelligent, quick-witted questions, and immediately wants her banished from the studio as soon as the show is done.
Right.
I mean, he is a total pig, and I have no doubt that game show hosts like that during that era, he probably is stereotypical of that time.
Oh my God. But just to listen to them, did I actually watch that? I probably watched it, not often, but saw it once or twice, but not aware of how positively grim that whole event was.
Well, I was but a child, so fortunately I didn't have to be subjected to the dating game. But it's used as yet another vehicle, as I said, to show the objectification of women. It's bad enough when it's affecting her as a professional actress, but then again, to have it twisted in the eyes of somebody like Rodney Alcara is where it becomes dangerous, and in this case, life-threatening.
So, Mary, he doesn't look to me like the most attractive guy who ever lived. He's got stringy, long, dark hair and a round face, and I'm trying to think, what is it about him that makes him so successful?
Well, I thought it was interesting. Daniel Zovato, who plays the role of Ronnie, is much better looking than they showed
in
the
job.
Film. And I don't know this, but to me it came across as, because this is shown through the woman's eyes, there's not a great delving into the psychology, which is often the case with these types of films, of the perpetrator.
Right.
And so you can understand, I mean, he's not bad looking. He comes across as genial. He was very intelligent. He actually served in the military and had an IQ of like 135.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's shown from the perspective of, you can see why women trusted him and believed in him.
Yes.
And so I liked the fact that they didn't make him super good looking. And I liked the fact that there wasn't any of the like close up on his face of his eyes twitching or anything when he's deciding on a victim. So I really appreciated that. It showed probably what a lot of the women and apparently even some young men fell victim to him because of that.
He was
approachable. And
what I could catch from that, he appeared willing to listen to their story, and he encourages them to tell it without interrupting and just accepting it. And I suspect that that was a real calling card for him. He wasn't pushing himself on them at all. Now, what he has, the seduction in there in that spectacular opening scene out in the desert in Wyoming.
Yes.
If you want to know that she's a great director, the way she handles that is just perfect. So we bring the baggage in. We know it's going to happen. The young actress wants to be discovered. And she figures that because he's a photographer and he may promote her photographs, that she's willing to go where most women would not go, out in the middle of Wyoming.
Alone.
With the one
alone with a man you don't really know.
Yeah, with a man you don't know. Isn't that...
And what I also liked, when you asked me to review the film, because I had seen a preview of it and I knew what it was about.
Yeah, okay.
Just the gratuitous violence, the gratuitous sex, the gratuitous view of the victims, and more of the focus on, as I said, the perpetrator. And that's really not the case. And so I thought, as a director, Anna Kendrick handled it very differently than a typical male director would have for this type of story, in that she really focused on the victims, not the violence. Mm. And it's implied, certainly, but you see very little of the true horror that I'm sure he inflicted on his victims.
One of the reasons that I really think she's a promising director is she cuts away on most of that. Mm-hmm. She does not indulge us with this ridiculous reality business.
Gratuitous.
Yeah. I mean, the best she does is to show him put his hands around the neck in the first scene. And then you know it's real trouble.
Yeah,
we knew that anyway.
And it's believed he's had over 100 victims, but in this film, they only highlight 4 or 5.
Right.
All of them are based on true occurrences. So Autumn Best actually was the teenage runaway. But the thing that was interesting about her, they changed her name.
Yes.
From Monique in real life to Amy, and she's the last victim that we see in this story. But what I appreciated about the casting from director's point of view is that Anna has one hand that's not fully formed. And so Amy, character of Amy played by Autumn Best, so she's not disabled per se, but she doesn't have a fully formed hand. And I thought it was really great that they cast her in not a role where that is even material. It's not even mentioned. It's not even referenced. It's just the way that character is.
Yes.
And so I really appreciated a rather mature choice. I mean, Anna Kendrick's 39 years old, but I appreciated her and the other creative team involved in the story not making that an issue for this actress.
Is she the one that calls the cops on him?
Yes.
Yeah. Again, another great scene. As you're sitting there, it becomes a thriller. How's she going to get out of this?
She went down the road to a diner that was next door to where they had stopped for gas and for him to go to the bathroom. And it was parked at the gas station. Right next door, she went to the diner and hid in the diner and called the police from the diner.
I thought she was
going. And so when he came out, he saw that the car door was open and she was no longer there. He's arrested.
Yes. One of my favorite sexist films.
That sounds so wrong to say, John.
I think you'll understand when I tell you what it is. 9 to 5. I mean, this is extreme, I realize.
Yes. Dabney Coleman's character was very extreme and very overt. But again, there's a grain of truth in that character.
I agree.
In Mr. Hart.
Yeah. My daughter, Thea, had written a sequel to that. She and Drew Barrymore called me to tell me that they had closed a deal. They were in Las Vegas having dinner for her 8 to 8. And allegedly $500,000 for the script. But as it went on, some of the women were at an age where there were some going to have a baby, like Amanda Peet was going to have a baby, so they had to postpone it. Drew, I think, had a miscarriage. So it began to be delayed to the extent they didn't produce it. Now, actually what happens is sometimes they buy these properties to keep them off the market. So I can't know exactly what happened. But that's what brought 9 to 5 back to me. It was Thea's 8 to 8, and she dispatched Dabney Coleman in the first half hour.
Good for her.
Mary, can you think of any?
You know, that's a challenging question, and I do think as a woman and reflecting on all that I saw growing up and where we are today, I look at certain films now that I loved growing up, and I cringe at the way women generally are treated.
Okay.
And a lot of the classic films, even though they had really great, strong women, we just did a show on Cinema Classics about Hepburn and Tracy.
Sure.
And certainly Katharine Hepburn played a lot of strong, great women. And Katharine herself was a leader in terms of gaining agency over her own career. Mm-hmm. But still, a lot of characters she played in the screwball comedies with Cary Grant, like Bringing Up Baby, and even the fantastic Philadelphia Story, her strong women still had to fit into a certain mold.
Boy, they did, yes.
In the time and the way society viewed women. I mean, Tracy Lord was the daughter of a millionaire and was marrying somebody. Initially, George Kittredge got the feeling it was more of a political marriage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The evolution of women in society and on film somewhat go hand in hand to where we are today, where we're talking about woman of the hour and going from the dating game, which was total objectification of women, to Anna Kendrick directing the story. But also, the dating game has become the schmaltzy reality TV shows that we see the The Bachelor, The Bachelorette. It's just a different form of the same thing.
Yes, you're so right. How would you fit Gone with the Wind in this? Is that an exception? Is she independent and strong even?
The character is, but the circumstances that Scarlett O'Hara is in is not. Now, she finds the strength to survive.
Yes.
The Civil War, pull herself up and continue to go on, because after all, tomorrow is another day.
Yeah, you're right.
But,
yeah.
But by the same token, the expectations of her as the daughter of a wealthy Southern plantation family is to marry well.
And, yes. Yeah. Well, that's all
and
very
to continue
19th century.
But to continue the
wow.
the way of life. You have characters like that who are emblazoned in your memory, but when you really look at the context in which they existed and what they do in the film, yeah. it's or expected to do in the film, it's
was it,
still
what?
Very misogynistic.
How about Hidden Figures? Do you remember that?
Remember Hidden Figures. And again, the women end up being triumphant in the
yes,
end, and
yes.
they moved the needle. But yeah, but I mean, I think there's a difference between reflecting a true story and reflecting, you know, Scarlett O'Hara is a made-up fictional character, but she's reflective of the
yes,
time in which
yes,
she lived.
Yes.
But the women from Hidden Figures were real women.
Yes.
And had to fight, and African-American women to boot. And had to fight for their professional accolades the way that they should have been been treated from the beginning. But I had, that's a true story of how they were treated.
Oh, yes.
Had to combine forces and work under the radar in order to triumph in the end.
Well, here's one. It had to be about strong women surviving. Is there any sexism in Sex and the City?
Well, there's a lot of sex in Sex
yeah,
and the City.
Yeah.
You know, I think. And it's interesting because Anna Kendrick's character is Cheryl Bradshaw
yeah.
and Sarah Jessica Parker's Carrie. Character is Carrie
yeah,
Bradshaw.
Yeah, right, you're right.
They certainly deal with sexism, but I think the thing about Sex and the City, it's women are taking control of their
yes.
own agency. Honesty about sex and what it means to them and relationships and what it means
yes,
to them.
Yeah.
So I think the tone of that is different because it's from a woman's point of view. Men may feel that it's sexist against men, but it's certainly a turn of the tables in terms of the characters and how honest they're being and open they're being about their own sexuality and wants and desires, especially the character of Samantha, played by Kim Cattrall.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
If you want to talk about just blatant sexism against women, I was a huge fan of the MASH television series.
Oh, right.
I was a little too young to see the film.
Yeah.
But having seen the film and reflecting back when I see old episodes, catch them sometimes.
Very
of
good,
MASH,
yeah.
It is so blatantly sexist.
Yes.
And I have the maturity, the wisdom from maturity. I look at that now and I think, ugh. No wonder women were treated as objects.
Oh.
I mean, and that was the military, which I have several well-documented real cases of sexism against women and disrespect and objectification.
Oh, yes.
So that would be certainly one that I think about that's cringeworthy to me now that I used to like.
Well, one that makes me cringe now that I was really fascinated by when it came out in 1972, Last Tango in Paris.
Ah, yes. I was also too young for that.
Yeah, you were.
With good reason.
Did you ever see it since then?
I have seen clips of it. I've never seen the whole thing.
Well, it's pretty
But
apparent.
Based on what you just said, I may not see it ever.
No, it is pretty disgusting. And in fact, Romy Schneider, whoever plays the part, is naked almost the whole film. Mm. And he is fully clothed, almost fully clothed through the whole film. Audacious. Apparently in 72, what the Catholic Church was mostly interested in was the, whether you see the sex or what. But in the end, it's just incredibly sexist. The other one is 9 1/2 weeks.
Yeah.
I can't believe you saw. This is with Mickey Rourke and Kim Basinger.
So returning to the film that got this conversation started.
Thank you.
And we talked about Anna Kendrick. This is her directorial debut. She did have some experience as an executive producer on a few films and projects leading up to this. But one of the things I think I really appreciated about her efforts, in addition to the female victim perspective on the subject matter, I thought that you mentioned the opening scene regarding cinematography, but this takes place in the 1970s. And she does a fantastic job with her creative team of creating. You feel like you were in the 1970s.
Indeed.
From the set of
you
the dating
right.
game, which is so the cars, the clothes, Rodney's long hair, all of it. You are immersed in the 1970s and in the era in which all of these things took place. It's a high quality made film without a huge budget.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of the production values, she did a great job.
Oh, she
with,
did.
With not hundreds of millions of dollars to play
no,
with.
Right.
So.
And she immerses you in it so that you're not even aware that she's replicating that time.
Yes.
Just
from her apartment.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, everything about it.
How about that tall guy?
The fellow actor.
Yeah. That's maybe teaching her acting or doing something.
A friend in the same boat that she is.
Yeah. I think he wants to be close to her.
He wants to have a relationship
yeah,
with her.
Yeah, right.
But she's not ready for that.
I thought that that was a very nice addition to this film, and it wasn't any different point of view other than what anybody is off on her own, say, in Hollywood and trying to make it and makes a friend and makes a male friend. And just the challenges that she knows that he's interested in her and she's not.
Yeah.
And I think he comes back again toward the end.
He does when she's moving out. They have an awkward exchange. But I think the thing that was interesting is Cheryl Bradshaw's story is the one that we know the most about in this film. So by bringing her neighbor in, who's also a struggling actor, and showing their relationship,
yes.
you get to know Cheryl. Unlike a lot of the victims' backstories, we hear bits and pieces of them because they're sharing them with Rodney as they're being
yes.
stalked. And they don't know they're being stalked, but he's stalking them. Mm-hmm. And so it helps you, I think, empathize with her and the position she's in and going on that show. And then her exchange with Rodney after she's picked him. You can be a lot more empathetic because you feel you know her and you know yes. her struggles.
Yeah, yeah. What's the title? Woman of the Hour.
So that was a reference to they would introduce the Bachelorette on the dating game, that she was the woman of the hour.
Ah.
I guess because that show lasted for an hour, which I can't even imagine.
So they did use that term.
They did use that term. It originally, when the script was being kicked around, it was originally called The Dating Game Killer. But that brings the focus to Rodney.
Yes, right.
So
right. Yeah.
I liked the change. Again, we have a female director, although the script was written by, I think, Ian McDonald. So the script was written by a man.
Sure.
But you have woman leading the team. And I thought that was a really, again, part of that pattern of flipping these types of films on end and really showing it and talking about it from the woman's
yeah.
perspective. Katharine Hepburn did Woman of the Year.
I wondered if that was.
Yes.
Yes, the Woman of the Year.
Yes.
Which is an exaltation of her, right? It was. I doubt if there was as much sexism in that.
In subtle ways. I mean, she's an overachieving beyond her husband, Spencer Tracy, and has they have to reconcile that, which of course you can imagine doesn't end up in the strong female's favor all the time.
Well, Mary Arena, the film is Woman of the Hour. It's streaming on Netflix. It is much more substantial than I thought it would be.
And me as well.
Anna Kendrick is a smart young woman, and she doesn't play on all the tropes of thriller films for this. What do you advise?
I think this is, for a first-time effort on her part as director, something that you should seek out and make your own opinion of, but I hope you'll get more out of it than you think you will.
Yeah, I don't think you'll be wasting your time.
Yes.
Yep.